Welcome to Bookish Podcast with Kath and Al, a podcast about books-ish. A quick disclaimer before we start, there may be some spoilers, so please save the episode for later if you don't want any. And also, please follow us on social at We Are Bookish Pod. We hope you enjoy.
Hello.
Hey, girl. Hey.
How are you?
I am feeling good because it's super sunny outside. Spring has finally sprung.
I know, it's about bloody time.
It makes me feel really nice. I just want to go out on walks in the afternoon and get some vitamin D.
Yeah, I don't know if I actually follow him, but he always comes off my For You page. He's got like a really lovely voice, and he was just talking random videos. And I'll have to send him to you later, but he did this one today and he was like, I just walked past someone and I smiled at them and they looked at me weirdly. So I gave him an even bigger smile and I said, the sun is shining, you've got nothing to be sad about. And then I walked off and I was like, or something like that. I don't think he was quite that insensitive to them because they might have had something to be sad about, but it was just really funny. And he's just got a really nice voice.
Oh my God.
The world does go a bit mad when it's like just a little bit sunny in the UK. Like, I think the first like slithers of sunshine we see, like people like light up the barbecue, they go straight to the pub. Like it. Yeah. And actually, I can see someone's balcony like from my flat and they were literally out there sunbathing all day. I was like, babes, it's not that warm. Like, it's really not that warm.
It makes me laugh because men will take off their jumpers and rock their tees. And it's like, the sun's out, but the temperature is not hot.
Yes. Yeah.
I love it.
But now I am glad it was sunny today. I needed it. I tried to go for a run and I got cramp in my foot. So I gave up and just walked. I thought it counted, you know. That's what I'm going to go with.
It is indeed.
But yeah, no, all very exciting.
Finally some sun.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's what we need and deserve. But yes. Anyway, today we're going to talk about fun things. Some non-fun things and some fun things, but it'll all be fun all along the way. Elle keeps sending me stuff on Twitter and I just don't even reply. I register them, but I didn't reply. Sometimes I do a react session.
Maybe it's because I do this with my sister. We'll send like maybe a lot in a row. It's like, yeah. Oh, I've seen this thing. And it's like a lot to reply to. We do that with each other on TikTok or Instagram. And I do that to you on Twitter. Just interesting tweets. Well, I'm like, ah.
Yeah. Sometimes I don't think my notification. I think the issue is that my Twitter notifications are in my like scheduled summary. So I don't see it. And then I see them at once.
And then you're like, God.
But obviously I have Twitter open on my desktop quite a lot. So, because I need it for work Twitter, but then sometimes I just switch, just have a look, cheeky little look at what's going on.
Have a switch, see what's going on.
Because the For You bit is different, and like the what's trending is different depending on which account you're on.
Exactly. And I always have to be careful because I switch between like three different accounts. So if I'm like, I want to look at the For You or what's trending, then I will look on my non-work related accounts because God forbid I hit like on something.
That's my rule though. I never like anything if I'm on my work laptop because it means I might be on my work account. So I just don't.
Yeah.
That's how I avoid that.
I don't have Twitter on like my work phones or anything like that. Not even on any phone. Because I know if I have Twitter on because I'll look up Love Island hashtag and it's just dangerous. So
I don't actually scroll, to be fair, on my phone. I don't really go on Twitter on my phone, actually.
I've done it less since the takeover.
Something really weird happened on Twitter today, though. I had a little dog in the corner. Did you have
that? I don't know what that's about.
Yeah. That's really weird. But anyway, one of the things that Elle sent me was a Teen Vogue article. We love Teen Vogue, to be fair. Mm-hmm. About a child influencer, YouTuber. And we talked about that in the last? No.
It was in our episode about Jeanette McCurdy.
Two episodes ago, I think.
So we did an episode on I'm Glad Your Mum Died. And Kath brought up this very interesting point related to something you had seen, right? About whether child influencers would feel the same way.
Yeah, because like we're just about to see that generation of that child influencers go into adulthood. Like some of them already have, but like I think there's a few things coming out of like how like it's just not really fair on the children.
Yeah.
And Elle sent me a Teen Vogue article about it because this girl has come out and said, oh shit, I've lost it. Oh, here we go. She basically it's anonymous at the moment, but she said that as soon as she turns 18, she's going to come out and like call her parents out. And like, in the article and stuff, it's like, oh, like I'm going to cut my parents off when I'm 18 and stuff. Like she's the sole earner of the whole family, and she has been since she was a child because she is YouTube famous. I don't know who they're talking about, but it's quite wild when she's like, Claire says they call her Claire in the article, but she's not called Claire. Claire says, or maybe it's a double bluff, maybe she is called Claire. How funny would that be? Claire says both her parents left their jobs because the revenue from the YouTube channel was enough to support the family and to land them a nicer house and a new car. That's not fair that I have to support everyone, she said. I try not to be resentful, but I kind of am. Once she told her dad she didn't want to do YouTube videos anymore, and he told her that they would have to move out of their house and her parents would have to go back to work, leaving no more money for nice things. Like, that's a lot to put on a child.
Well, yeah, it's manipulative, isn't it? You just have to trust that the parents are doing right by the kid. Some of my favourite family influences now, I've seen it more so recently where, like, the family broke up, so it's the parents are separated. But as the kids have gotten older, when they say they don't want to be in a video or they don't want to have a photo taken, that she very much like respects what they're doing, because at the end of the day, she chose to put their life on the internet, not them.
Yeah.
But it's, I guess luckily for her, she's got other children that want to be on film. But
I think you also have to accept that like your kids have choice, like can make a choice. I know I followed this woman called Dom, and she does like stop motions now, but she did start off doing like photos of like her and her two daughters, and it was like, oh, that is three. And then like one of them got a bit older and decided she didn't want to be in it anymore, and she just made this post like, things are gonna look a bit different from now on because media society just doesn't want to be in it, which obviously like
fair.
I think that's really good. But also this article says that though Claire's parents tell her they're saving part of her money for her college, she doesn't know how much, and there is no law protecting the earnings of children who are influencers. And we were just saying, like, actually, that would help a lot, because, okay, still there's still be a lot of exploitation and stuff, and it's still like, you know, where's the line for putting like children online and all the rest of it. But if the parents couldn't take the money, like, how would that change things? Like, if they had to keep the money for the child legally, that might make things quite different.
Because I think I did read somewhere about how much or what percentage had to be put into savings, and I can't remember how that was facilitated. And I can't remember what career it was, but it did pertain to children. So it's really interesting, because I think around the same time that article came out by Teen Vogue, Cole Sprouse, you know, of like The Sweet Life of Zack and Cody and Riverdale, he did like a whole tour of podcasts talking about his relationship with his mother and his parents, and how she had like essentially like pimped him and his brother out onto the acting scene to earn money, and they were the main breadwinners. And he was talking about that, and it's like really interesting. Like, I think if you're on the internet or on Twitter or seeing people had like memed him and stuff like that, because on one particular podcast, and I think it's like Call Her Daddy, he was like smoking a cigarette and being a little bit like extra in the way that he was sort of carrying himself. But it was certainly interesting. I think you're right. I think it's going to be actors and child actors that we knew from our age, the day and age, and we're definitely going to see a lot more influencers child influencers talking about the same thing.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, hopefully there's going to be support and like hope. I mean, I imagine there'll be people who are like fairly specialists in like child trauma that will be like trained in like child influencers, which is just so messed up, isn't it? But
it is.
Yeah,
it is. But I mean, we talk more about all of this and more, but specifically in relation to how it affects like Jeanette McCurdy in our episode about her and the book I'm Glad My Mum Died. So I mean, yeah, don't be put off by the title, because it's provocative for a reason.
Very provocative.
But definitely give that a listen.
Yeah, and the book, read it or listen to it, I think.
Yeah.
If you're interested the topic as well.
Yeah.
But yeah. Oh, I've got pins and needles. Just sat on my foot funny. I keep doing that at the moment. I need to stop. I need to just sit on my feet and then like I can't. And then I'm like at work and then I get up and I'm like, oh my God.
That funny feeling you get.
Yeah. So bad. But yeah. But today the book we're going to talk about is Cleopatra and Frankenstein, which we have been promising to talk about for a while. And we went to see Coco Mellor's chat about it, and I think, did we talk about it? I can't remember if we've talked about it, but we've definitely written a blog post about it.
We did.
So that was a lovely evening. She's really lovely and we had a really nice time.
She's just so personable.
Yeah,
she was so personable. I feel like we sometimes go to book chats and not to say that the authors aren't personable, but you just really got a good vibe from her.
I think
really enjoyed her talking about her paperback.
We just got a lot out of her chat, I think. And yes. I think that day, like, I was feeling a bit I hadn't slept or something, and I was a bit like out of it, and it like kept me engaged, whereas I think if somebody had been a bit less, maybe I wasn't very well, I think I had a cold, didn't I, but anyway, if somebody had been like a little bit less engaging, I probably wouldn't have been able to concentrate, because I was just a bit like, my head was just a bit like, whoa.
Yeah, so, it's hard because it's like an evening thing. It's after work. You've already had a really long day, and sometimes how receptive you'll be to a person is measured on how much tolerance you have left. And that's got nothing to do with them. It's literally just everything that's happened in the day before you. But she was great.
And it was a Monday. Really great.
It was a Monday.
It was really great. And she talked about Cleopatra Frankenstein, which is her debut, which is pretty impressive, to be honest. And I think she has another one coming out next year or later this year. Blue Sisters.
Yeah, it's like she said, it's going to be very different to what Cleopatra and Frankenstein.
Which I think is good, because I think if she wrote something else similar, then she'd be in that. That's the kind of book she'd write. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Which is fine. Absolutely. Like, loads of our like favourite authors write like similar books. But I think you have to like, you almost make that decision, don't you, with your second book? Because David Nichols was talking about that when I went to see him speak. He was saying like, after he wrote One Day, like everyone just expected him to rewrite One Day in every book that came out.
You can't do that. Yeah. It's like a magic thing, isn't it? I bet Sally Rooney feels that way about Normal People.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is like a hard thing. That's really hard. It's a very hard expectation to have.
It is, an author, yeah.
And for them, when they write like other works, because and a bit unfair, perhaps.
But I think it's more also than just that. Yeah, and it's kind of subconscious, I think, almost, because you're like, oh, I really liked that book, so I'm going to read something else by that author, and then you might feel like you kind of have to manage your expectations like quite consciously, don't you? Sally Rooney especially, I think, to be honest.
And she will tell you otherwise. She already did.
Yeah.
What was that, Beautiful People, Where Are We? What, Beautiful World, Where Are You? She told you exactly what she was actually thinking. Like, that's how I feel. That's how I remember reading it.
Interesting.
But no, Cleopatra and Frankenstein follows exactly those two people, Cleo and Frank. They nickname each other Cleopatra and Frankenstein because of who those people are historically. But it follows them over the course of a year, from their first meeting through to their marriage, and then how their lives and how their actions bring people together, and the subsequent fallout of that. And it's great because there's loads of characters to explore. And she's, I feel like Coco Melis is very, very good at writing character. Because for as many people she had to write for and for very few pages, I feel like you get a good depth of who these people are.
Yeah, I agree. I found it like a little bit, well, I was just very surprised when it switched narrators. Even though like we heard her talk about it and stuff, it didn't quite clock that they were different narrators. I think she probably did say that. But I was just like, wait, hold on a sec. What's going on? I was so like, oh my God, a changed narrator. I wasn't expecting that at all. I liked it, but it's just like, yeah, just quite like, actually the book, that way, does it? Sorry, did you hear that? I said,
I was trying to think of what that book was. I was trying to picture it in my head, but then I've got that.
But that does it in like an image. It does it in more of a jarring way. Like the chapter just starts and you have to sort of work out who's speaking again, and it changes like quite a lot.
Yeah.
So this has done a lot, like the style changes. So it's obvious. So it's like obvious it's a different narrator.
For context, the narration changes for the character of Eleanor, and she's the only one that has that different style of narration. And I had that jump on Audible, so I listened both, as you know, I listened to the book as well as read it, and I'd switched at the most perfect time for that. When I got to the switch, I did that on audiobook, and actually thinking about it now, talking about it, that character Eleanor. I feel like it was it was fresh. It felt like it was needed, and she was a fresh perspective from her own, from everybody else. I feel like where everyone else was dealing with, like, she was dealing with stuff, and Frank very much sums this up at the end of the book when he's talking about how Eleanor received love and they was able to function in a way that we weren't, because she was able to receive it in a way that we weren't given the opportunity to. And it's almost like, because she's on a different track from everyone, her perspective is like fresh in comparison to everyone else who's dealing with something a little, who's dealing with shit. Everyone else in this book is dealing with shit, with their identity, with their traumas, with their relationship. Oh, I don't know.
She's dealing with stuff, but in a different way.
In a different
way.
She's
not in the same, like, they're all, like, in this bubble where they're, like, running around New York, like, going out all the time, like, you know. And she's not in, she doesn't have the same lifestyle as them. So.
No.
Yeah, she's kind of, like,
removed. These, like, I mean, their circle, Frank and Cleo, their friends that we get to introduce to. So Frank, Cleo, Anders. Anders is a Danish man who's been living in New York for a very long time. He came as a model. Now he works in advertising, then moves to, like, publishing and the magazine world. You have Zoe, who is Frank's sister. She's biracial. She deals with the fact that, one, she is biracial. Two, that she's suffers from seizures. Three, that she's young. Four, that she's broke and wants to be an actor, and how she sort of fits into this world, and that she's beautiful and what that means and how people receive her. You have Quentin, who's also they sort of speak about that he might have some identity issues, maybe like embracing his femininity and wanting to wear women's clothing and being accepted by the rest of the world, being able to do that. He's currently gone through a breakup and he's now dating a guy that gets him addicted to meth. And then you've got, who else is there? Santiago, he's a chef. He's very lovable. He's very lovable. He's a chef. And he goes through a transformation as well. He's looking for love and he's going for like a body transformation.
Mm-hmm.
Who else is there?
That was a very good summary off the top of your head.
So you've got all these Oh, this is the top of my head. I've just gone off on a roll. And although I feel like all of these people, like Kath said, they hang around in the same circles. They're very much, they have a very... oh my God, did you hear that?
What was it?
That was my WhatsApp, sorry, because I had the thing open for the...
Oh, sorry, I didn't guys. Hear it because it would be in your headphones.
Tapping me.
It would have been in your headphones. No, I didn't hear it.
It just really jarring. Sorry, guys, I had a WhatsApp come through on my laptop. They all have really unhealthy relationships, and that's, you know, managed. A coping mechanism for that is like managing it through the use of alcohol and drugs, and that's their vice, I suppose. Mm. And they're all in the same friendship group. And Eleanor, although... And it's a, she ha, they lightly touch upon her relationship with a man as she had that she had with the teenager, but I really wish we got more of that. But I think she has much healthier. I don't know the word.
Like she doesn't turn to like drinking and drugs, basically, does she? I guess.
No, she's just got better vices, I think, to deal with it. And I think a lot is said, could be said for what Frank said at the end, that it's just different.
Yeah. I really liked her character. I felt really sorry for her as well, like, especially like with the Frank thing to begin with. I mean, obviously, like everything with her dad and stuff, that was like really hard. But in terms of like her like relationship to the other characters, I did, you could tell, like, I think writing her in a different style and putting her in that place where she's, like, away from the other characters, but then you almost feel like she's, like, looking on, like, looking at their lives, like, as, like, a spectator and wanting to be part of Frank's life. I'm glad she gets it in.
She does feel like othered.
Yeah, yeah.
In that way. Like, outside of it.
Mm-hmm. Which is not, that's not really a bad thing, to be honest.
No,
but it, yeah, I loved the bit as well. Like, I think they talked about this when we went to go and see them chat, but it's on page of the paperback anyway. It's on page 322, and it's like it's just a list of stuff, and it's like I need to make money, I need to write today, I need to clean the bathroom, I need to eat something, I need to quit sugar, I need to cut my hair, I need to call Verizon, I need to savor the moment, I need to find a library card, I need to learn to meditate, I need to try harder, I need to get that stain out, I need to find better health insurance, I need to discover my signature. This is actually my brain, people. Like, this is what my brain does all the time. Just like make a mental list of everything she needs to do. As I was reading that, I was like, oh my god, I need to get the stain out of my rug, like I need to pack my bag for tomorrow, like I definitely need to stop drinking.
So it's very that. I'm trying to find the bit. There's something that her mum says to her. She leaves the house, she's just like, you could fall in love today or something like that. And it's just like, oh my god, that's such a positive way to just view the world. I did like that bit about Eleanor, though. Her so as well, in the book, her consciousness reads. You know what was very, I found it similar to, Kath? You know when we read No One's Talking About This?
Mm.
And it's like just intermittent thoughts. Like, it just reads like a train of thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I really liked as well.
I tell you what's like that is I'm a Fan. Wait till you read that.
I'm a Fan. I picked it up. I started it on the train.
Yeah.
Yes, I found it. Remember, you could fall in love today. And I thought, I bet Eleanor would like that. I'm sure Eleanor would think that was just great. She beat the words out with her pencil. You could fall in love today. Her mum tells her that all the time. And I just absolutely love that. And it's true. So, like, when we meet Eleanor, she's just been let go from her job. She was like a screenwriter in LA. She's moved back in with her parent, well, with her mother. She's 37. Oh, I feel like I'm seeing me in the future. And then, but it's me now at 32. Her dad's unwell. Has he got
dementia?
I think he's got dementia. And then along with that, it's like, it's the thing that doesn't kill you. It's everything else that comes with that.
Mm. He dies, doesn't he, in the book?
He dies, yeah. And she's grappling with him being, you know, poorly and dying, and her parents aren't together, but her mum still like supports her dad. And I think she can never quite get her head around why she does it, because she doesn't have to. But her mum is just amazing. She's such a great person to have like by your side as your backbone, as support. Like, that's the kind of parent that you'd want. It's very much Frank and Cleo are very much in absence of that. They don't have a mother that plays that role. Like, Cleo's mother, you know, she's no longer around. She commits suicide. And Frank's mother is around, but she's very, 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 very selfish. She had her kids very young, and really, I think she just views them as an inconvenience.
Yeah. Is she the one? Remind me, Frank's mother, she's the one that has the boyfriend and she had the ski resort.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I thought I'd mixed it up with another book then. I was like, is that right? No, but it is. I am thinking of the right character, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that the one of the scenes that really like stuck with me is then when they go out for lunch with Cleo's dad.
Yeah.
And then like Frank like storms off the end. I was like, yes.
Yeah. It gave an insight into Cleo, didn't it, for him? Mm. You could see he was slowly realizing the shit she's had to put up with, maybe the why she is, you know, the way she behaves, the way she does, or gives context to who she is.
I also think that bit's important in the book to show that Cleo and Frank really, really loved each other, and that like all that happened is like doesn't take away from the fact that they did really love each other, and like they did really support each other through a lot. It's just they weren't quite right for each other, and in terms of like what each other needed at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I quite like that the book is like there was a lot of love in it, and also explains how like a relationship's like not right for those people at the time, but it doesn't mean that the love wasn't there.
Yeah, it's together they're very like, they would combust, they like hit self-destruct, right? And they almost bring out the worst in each other. What Frank loved about, he says in the book, what he loved about Cleo, loves about Cleo, is that she can see right through him. And in the same way that it's like surprising and he's like, oh my god, it also like irks him. And she knew him so well, but they weren't compatible in the way that it needs to be, the way that it needs to count.
And I also think like the dynamic of like him being older and him being like a big money earner, and like her sort of like having all that space to do her art but then not doing it because she's got all day every day and no like structure, and like just that like power dynamic. He's like, I provide everything for you. Like, I think there's a passage, actually I think I've marked it, let me see if I can find it. Where they're having an argument. Oh, here we go. And he's like, what more can I do? Seriously, what more can I possibly do for you? She tried to speak, but he barreled on. No, tell me, Cleo. Please tell me what it is I'm not providing for you. I work like a dog. I earn more money than all your little friends combined. I give you everything you ask for. I've never tried to control what you do. You paint, you don't paint. I support you anyway. And now you're going to accuse me of neglecting you, neglecting my duties. I just think, like, obviously they're in, like, a big fight, and she's, like, saying you're never here and stuff. And I just think that, like, power dynamic of him being, like, I provide for you, so what are you complaining about? Even though he's, like, not physically there with her and, like, emotionally there with her either.
Yeah. And I think as well, at the beginning when he met her, he enjoyed her being like this young pretty little thing. You know, that was her value, but she was so much more than that. Didn't always give her credit for it. Yeah, it's just like, well, I gave you all of this, so why are you not being the fun, carefree, pretty little thing I picked up on New Year's Day or whenever it is that they met?
And she loses herself a bit along the way. I think they both
a
do
lot they, yeah they do a lot.
Because Frank has a problem with alcohol, and Cleo tries to like ask him to stop, and he's like, I don't have a problem. Like, I think Coco Mello was saying, because Coco Mello is sober, isn't she? And I think she said that has had her own journey with like sobriety and stuff. So she was talking about it, saying that like, he sort of acts as if like the way he's living is like fine and normal, and that he's just going out and having a good time. But actually, like, his partner's like trying to be like, no, please stop. And like, he's that like pushes like a wedge between them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think, I mean, I don't know. I think that bit was done quite well, personally. What do you think?
I think so too. I think the whole exploration of like masculinity, that effect, especially like him being like a white male, an older white male who's a big advertising boss, I found really interesting, because especially in juxtaposition to the other characters who are either of different ethnicities or different sexualities, that by default everything is actually just easier for him in society. And I think Cleo calls him out on that as well at some point in one of the many arguments that they have. That it's just like, well, it's of course it's easier for you. You don't acknowledge that we've both gone through the same things. Because I think at one point they were shouting much about whose life was harder. She goes, oh, yeah, for me, big white man. Like, do you know what I mean? It was quite an interesting thing, because...
Which is actually quite an interesting thing to have an argument about, because it's like, actually, like, there's two different people could go through the exact same thing and react to it differently.
Yes.
Like, different people are impacted by different things in different ways. Like, something that could be small to one person could be enormous to somebody else, and vice versa.
And that's why it's interesting with Eleanor, because she... It has gone through something. It's not spoken about as such. It's just, this has happened. And I guess the rest of it is to your imagination. But she's a little bit more, she is more high functioning than the other two are. But I mean, we don't know really what happened or how she dealt or coped with it, or what her point of view is on what she went through. Because, yeah. But I think because she's had a better support system, that's probably allowed her to cope better with things as they've arisen.
Yeah.
Oh, I found another bit that I thought that Eleanor's mum was just so great about. So when Eleanor's dad dies, the rabbi calls, and he wants to know why they're not sitting a week of Shiva. Now, apologies for my ignorance, I'm not entirely sure what that means in the Jewish faith, or when it comes to burying people. But in response to that, she just went, so what? And Eleanor's brother Levi is like, what do you mean? So that's it, 10 years of Hebrew school and it comes to that, so what? And Eleanor's mum says, let me tell you something. Those are two of the most powerful words in the English language. Right between them is free and happy life. And I loved that.
Yeah. Yeah. So Eleanor's character like has a lot of good moments.
Yeah.
Like her narration bit.
Yeah. I just thought it was just great. Actually just all of the foil, all of the characters, you get a good sense of who they are. What motivates them.
Yeah, and like in, go back to Eleanor, I think this is an Eleanor fan club right now, but I've got two bits marked and they're just like observations she makes. She's just like, the couple next to me on the PATH train are both wearing leather jackets that reach their ankles. I wonder what came first, the jackets or the relationship? And then there's another bit and it's like, hair looks great, says the lady in line for coffee ahead of me into her phone, but generally I'm falling apart. Which is jokes, and I think I've literally said to you before, like, yeah, my eyebrows look great but everything else is shit. It's just such like a funny thing, like people do actually say stuff like that, and like I could imagine being on the phone to you on a hot girl walk being like, yeah, Ellie, like everything sucks but my eyebrows look really great today, so that's fine, and somebody overhearing me.
So it's all good, at least my eyebrows are intact.
Exactly.
Do you know what I absolutely loved? Not I loved, sorry, that's the wrong words. Because she did, when we saw Coco Melos at Waterstones a few weeks back, she did talk about Jesus. Was it Jesus Christ, our Lord and Saviour? Is that what they called him? Pet they
Jesus,
had.
Jesus, how I adore you or something.
Jesus, how I adore you, something like that.
Oh my god, yeah. This is the wildest thing.
I listened to that on audiobook, and I went, what? Like, literally on the tube, like, what? And I had to go back because I couldn't believe that's how I heard the part. So Jesus Christ, what is the name of this thing?
Hold on, I'll find it.
So they get a pet. I don't think it's legal in the state of New York.
No, it's not. I googled it for quite a while.
Yeah.
What's it called?
A slide glider. Something.
Oh my god, what's it called?
A love glide.
Here we go. A sugar glider.
Sugar glider.
Okay, right. I'm at the bit where they name it. So, it flies the way it dies. Oh my god, I can't.
Oh, it's just horrible.
Here we go. It's Oh Jesus, How I Adore You.
How I Adore You. I was like, okay, that's amusing. And then the way Oh Jesus, How I Adore You met her, and
I felt unwell when I read that.
I couldn't quite understand what happened, and so I rewound it, and I'm like, oh no, I did hear that exactly.
No, because I was on the tube and I literally was like, and like the person next to me was like, okay?
What page is that on? Oh no, you're on the name part.
Oh no, I'm at the bit where they name her.
What page is that? I don't
know. Oh shit, I've just come off it. I don't know.
Oh Jesus, How I Adore You.
I don't even want to tell people what happens to the sugar glider, to be honest. But basically, it's awful because they basically like sugar glider proof their flat. But the sugar glider flies. Basically, they put in a cage and then she cries all night. So they let it out.
Yeah.
And it flies around. And so they have to make sure it can't get out. And then I'm going to say the horrible thing that happens. Frank comes home like steaming drunk and he leaves the toilet seat up. And the sugar glider falls to its death in the toilet.
But he doesn't realize until he's like peeing that the sugar glider's in the bowl. It's just like,
also like at that point Frank and Cleo are like not in a good place, and he's like, no. Oh my god, how am I gonna tell her? Because no. She gets really attached to it because she's at home all day with the sugar glider, and they like treat it like a baby. It's quite cute, but like awful. He's so jarring.
Something gives you like a,
yeah,
but it's so weird when it flies. People, Google this at home because it honestly looks very weird.
I googled it because I was like, what? Like,
it's the way it lifts it, like the wing part of the sugar glider.
But what possessed Coco Mellers to put a sugar glider into her book? I feel like the sugar glider needed its own narration. It needed to be its own foil character.
A sugar glider is just a gliding possum. So for anyone that is not sure, that's what, if you can think of a possum, it's a possum that glides. The sugar glider is a small omnivorous arboreal and nocturnal gliding possum.
Do you know what I'm thinking of right now though? It's our out of context for this episode.
The sugar glider.
Oh,
funny. God, it was just very like, oh dear. The other part, I mean, also, guys, like, probably, like, and I've mentioned suicide before, but, like, a trigger warning for that when you read it, because there is quite a graphic scene somewhere between, I don't think.
It's towards the end.
Yeah.
I think that my one thing about this book is the very end when Frank goes to visit Cleo in Italy. And she takes him to her installation, and it's basically a recreation of
her attempted
suicide. That was so jarring. Mm. I was so like, that is so awful. I don't know how I feel about that. Like, I was there's quite a lot of like shocking moments in this book, but that bit I was like, oh my god. I don't know how I feel about that.
He didn't take into account how he treated her, but then I just think she didn't really think about how he found her, like how traumatic that could be to find someone who did that. Because I don't think her attempt was to leave this marriage, right? Is what she said. But I don't know that it was really for her to leave this world. She just felt desperate enough that she needs to act upon leaving the marriage. And that's where her head went. Which is sad. And it's all very
it's tragic, isn't it? It's kind of like if you think of like a tragedy play, like a Shakespeare tragedy, but I mean obviously the ending was wrapped up quite nicely, actually.
All of the endings, with the exception of one character, where I actually really hated that happened to him.
Yeah, like, because the rest of it's like quite happy, isn't it? And it gets wrapped up.
Everyone in some shape, so like Zoe. Did I talk about Zoe? Zoe, Frank's sister. She meets a Japanese man on this. So she goes to this. Climaxing. For pleasure, no,
it's like a sex positive workshop.
Yes, and it had quite an effect on her. You could tell it had an effect on her, even if she hadn't realized that for herself. In this sex positive workshop that she goes to, this guy gives this metaphor about being in the hole, because she clearly exhibits like elements of loneliness or depression, or not depression, but just elements that he can recognize in herself. In her that she hasn't quite figured out herself yet. And he tells this anecdote about how there's a person in the hole and these people come up, different people, like a lawyer and a banker and a priest or something, all come up and try and get this person out of the hole and they don't. And then the last person to come to the hole is a spiritualist. And so they're trying to get them out, they just get in there with them. And it's a metaphor for like, now they're not alone in the hole, like that they have some, like it's a metaphor for loneliness basically. And I just thought it was really beautiful, and I got it when I read it. And Zoe goes on this thing, was like, I don't get it. And then Cleo is able to explain it to her. That's when they don't have such a good relationship, that actually it's a metaphor for loneliness.
Yeah,
but that moment in this workshop has an effect on her that she doesn't quite put together until the very end. And in that workshop, she meets this girl who's a sugar baby, and then she goes and she joins this site for a little bit further down the line, and she meets this man who bestows lots of like great wisdom on her, and from that they wrap her up as like starting her own sort of like sex positive venture. But I love that Cleo's like, oh, you know, she attacks it with all the youthfulness of someone who hasn't realized that people have done this many times before her. But you know, it was just nice to see that she did that, and it was nice to see her come into herself in that way, because she's very, very lost in very many different ways before she relies on Frank to like help her out. She also has a terrible relationship with Frank's mother. She also heavily relies on alcohol and drugs as a vice,
but she that was seizures, quite nicely, I so thought. She's not like
yes.
I do think like there was so much about each character, and like a lot of like interconnecting relationships, like
yes,
like brother and sister, and then like romantic relationships, like the best friend relationship, which is an interesting one. But yeah, it's really good. I really liked the way that it's definitely a character book, I would say, like, rather than plot. I mean, a lot happens, but, like, you read it for the characters rather than for the plot.
It's driven by the characters, yeah. Do Anders and... No, I think they do. Anders is Frank's best friend. Do Anders and Frank have a scene together? They must do.
No, I don't because think they
what,
do.
I feel like you learn about their relationship. But not by them interacting, by their interactions with other people. And so what I really liked was when Santiago, who is a friend in common of Anders and Frank and Cleo, goes to visit Anders in LA, you understand their dynamic more through that conversation between Santiago and Anders than I think you ever do see with Frank and Anders. I don't know if you ever see them in the same seeing or conversing with each other, not in such a deep way.
No, and, I mean,
we talk about, I say that because Cleo and Anders have an affair.
Which annoyed me, not going to lie. I was like, what are you doing?
Why?
What are you two doing? Like, the best friend? How cliche.
Yeah. It's funny that. So Cleo and Anders hook up before Frank and Cleo become serious. So Frank and Cleo meet first at a party that is hosted by Santiago or Quinton, one of them, right?
Mm.
And no, I think it may be Santiago. And in that time, when Cleo thinks that she's going to be deported by from the US, because that's where it's set in New York, she sleeps with Anders because she doesn't think anything's going to happen with Frank, but then it does.
Hmm.
And I wondered whether Anders just coveted what Frank had as opposed to really wanting Cleo. Because you can see there's tension there between Anders and Cleo.
Yeah.
And you learn about Anders and Frank's relationship by other people, but I don't feel like we really see them talk.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one, actually. But I feel like you couldn't have done, I mean, it's quite a long book anyway. Couldn't really have been longer, I don't think. Actually, yeah. She said that she took characters out, I think, which I think is probably a wise decision.
I also really liked the way they wrapped up Santiago. We got to see him and understand him. He was probably like the nicest character, like after Eleanor. He was really like, he was just very genteel. He wanted to feed people, make like that kind of like,
oh yeah,
like, motherly.
Oh yeah, and he moved to LA. Did he move to LA?
No, he went to see Anders in LA because he was opening a restaurant.
Oh, yeah, of course. And then, oh, yeah, I remember now, sorry. Yeah,
yeah, and he was saying that he didn't like when Anders was like, hey, big man, he's like, hey, don't call me that.
Yeah.
Because he was developing a positive relationship with his body and he had gone to like a Weight Watchers, an equivalent.
Sweet man. And he meets Catwoman. Oh, no. Sweet guy.
And then he ends up marrying her. I think he finds the confidence to be like, right, I'm going to go and ask her out because she's just so lovely.
No.
And they end up getting married and I'm like, yes,
I love him.
I was happy for those resolutions for me in the book.
I gave it on Goodreads 4 stars.
Yes.
And my review, I'm trying to write reviews at the moment. I said
you're being consistent as well.
I know, because I want to like remember what I thought about it, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Rather than just what I rated it. So I said, I really loved this book, the characters, the descriptions. The change to the narrator was super jarring at first, but I think it makes the book special. I heard Coco Mellis talk about this novel before I read it and her love of foil characters. So I think that made me really appreciate the different characters and the way she chooses to tell the story. I definitely recommend as a holiday book too, as it's a good one to get absorbed in for hours on end.
Oh my God, yeah. That's a good holiday read, actually.
Yeah. Because I didn't want to put it down at times. I was like in it. With all the characters and they're all there with me and I was just like you know, it would be my stop on the tube and I'd be like, oh, for God's sake.
Also, it's a good audio listen as well. I read probably like 95% of it. It was only because I had to like race through for book club and I never finished it for book club anyway. I literally finished it this morning, but it was the narrator really great. I think she is British, so I can't do it when people have really jarring British accents, but I think she actually was genuinely British. You could tell me the other way around. If you're American and you found her accent really jarring, then, well, we can't have it all. But I thought she did a good job, at least for my ear anyway. Mm. It wasn't like, oh my God, in Coronation Street, they've got this character. Sorry to jump. They've got this character who's supposed to be American and it's so jarring to hear him put on the accent because he can't do it. She does this narrator for Cleopatra and Frankenstein. I think her, especially because she has to do like proper New York accents as well.
Mm.
I think she's done well.
Mm. That's good then. Yeah. Well, I'm going to go have dinner. And watch Love is Blind, probably, or maybe Married at First Sight. I can't really keep up with both. I'm struggling.
So I just saw on Twitter that they're going to do a live reunion of Love is Blind. It's
live.
Yeah, because this season apparently has done the best of it, like all of them. Obviously, season one will forever have a place in my heart because it is the best for me. But this season, in comparison to the last two, is just like...
Yeah. I'm gripped, not going to lie. But Al, I'm really upset because the next drop is on Friday. So we can't watch any together.
Oh, we can't watch any together.
No.
No, we could, technically, at midnight. If you can get it all in the morning.
Let's watch Love's Blind.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're having a sleepover, guys.
We're having a sleepover.
It's because me and Ellie live like so far away from each other.
So it's like I can come out for the evening, but I don't really want to get a train late at night.
Yeah, we either meet in Central or like Al comes for a sleepover.
Yeah. Oh my god. So yeah, just catch up.
Okay.
I don't mind like watching episodes that you're catching up with either, because I could easily watch these ones again.
To be fair, it is Tuesday already and I might be at Tom's tomorrow. He won't watch it. I was having a binge sesh and then my neighbour locked herself out, so she came over and she was at a different point than me. So I think she was before me, so I didn't want to like watch with her. She was like, oh, I could jump in. I was like, no, it's fine, we'll watch something else. So yeah.
What's your thoughts? So what I really like about this season is, and what I feel was missing from the last two, so season two and three, is that we have, and not to compare, but they are just literally like put them on a pedestal, brilliant. We have like a Lauren and Cameron in this season, and it's like I feel like genuine love and genuine affection. I don't feel like I can at this
I
point
who it is. I could guess, but I'm not going to because I don't want to ruin it for me.
You're not ruining it. It's what you, it's how you, it's obvious.
Oh, okay.
Where are you now? You're at the thing.
So I've watched all the like pod stuff. So they're on their like honeymoon. Well, not honeymoons because they're not married. Sorry, I'm getting confused with maths. so much reality TV to watch. They're like on their little like getaway.
Yeah.
And then all met up for the pool party.
It's who you think it is.
Okay.
Oh,
yay!
Yeah. So right now, as things stand, that they still feel like a really genuine... I would be shocked if anything happens.
Okay.
And then everyone else is just fucking toxic or messy, which is fine. Because I think you need, like, someone to root for, and then everyone else is just working it out. Like, I feel like you need someone to root for, like Lauren and Cameron, and then you need someone that you can still get behind but a little bit messier, like Amber and Barnett. And I don't think we've quite got an Amber and Barnett yet, but this has just been very good. And also, like, I feel for anyone that's been triggered by this sort of Mean Girl storyline, just know that.
Mean Girl. I mean, oh my God. Yeah. Like, I texted Ellie and I was like, oh my God.
I hope that this is a horrible way to learn a hard lesson, can I say, in such a public space.
Yeah, that's the thing they are. Well, they're not that young, actually.
Because no, I was like, 20s.
Oh, they're quite young, but they're like 2 years younger than me.
Yeah.
I knew better 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Not that I've ever been like that anyway, but do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like...
It's just a very public way to learn a very hard lesson.
I know that is the problem, isn't it? And it does concern me and it does make me quite worried for these people.
Yeah, I just hope that anyone who has been triggered by their behavior, because I've seen a lot of that on social, being like, this has just been really upsetting to see how they've behaved. I just hope that I don't know,
but yeah. So in the preview they're like, someone says like, oh, I've made a mistake. Mm-hmm. As in like right at the start, and so I've like got my guesses as to who's gonna say that.
Tell me your predictions.
Well, it's obviously that I can't remember the names, so rubbish, because I'm watching maths as well, there's too many people. I need to maybe just commit to one. But the guy, basically the blonde girl, and then the two guys who wanted her.
Oh.
So like one of those.
Paul and Kwame.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I'm definitely, it's not Chelsea. Yeah, Michael, Paul or Kwame. It's been a good one for sure. Like, well done, Netflix. Because the last two were trapped. I mean, after that cutie story and the stuff.
But also, last season, wild. I remember I came in and my housemate was watching it and she was like, at the start, and I was like, babes, you're in for a ride.
Oh my god, right there. So I've been watching lots of like YouTubers break it down and stuff, like either people that are like commentators or actual psychiatrists.
You're ridiculous.
I know I can't get enough of the commentary. And so there's a guy, his name is Dr. Honda, he's a psychiatrist in Seattle, so they're filming in his city, right? And he's just talking about general like tidbits, like things you should know about Seattle, etc. My director at work did tell me that they had a hard time casting in Seattle and they had to go further afield. That's why a few people are from Portland, because they couldn't get anyone really in Seattle to cast. But when he sees the stuff with Micah and Irina and how they treat the other girls, because he's such a genuinely lovely man, like I want to put him in my pocket and take him home and just keep him really safe. When he sees it, he's just so genuinely upset that people could be that way. And I just go, Oh, God.
Yeah, send it to me.
Yeah, I will do.
Yeah, I'm actually going to go watch it now.
Okay, I'm going to let you go. Sorry, guys. So, we've had to keep going for a whole 55 minutes, I think.
Yeah, shouldn't get us started on like reality TV. I haven't, like, to be fair, I don't watch Love Island anymore. I think that's just it.
Love Island out.
Yeah, but I think it's different when it's like maths, to be fair, is quite hard because it's like, but it's only Monday to Thursday, so you only have 4 episodes in the week. Mm-hmm. But they are quite long. It's but like I do skip some of it. Yeah, I do skip some of it. Like if it's like a wedding, I'm like,
don't care.
but with Love is Blind, it's a bit easier because it's like you can just like binge it and there's no ads and stuff.
It is actually just bingeable content.
I think when I, like, because my parents have Sky, so when I, like, have ever been at my parents' and watched Love Island, like, back when I lived with them or whatever, then, like, I just, like, whiz through bits. So, like, I think that's, like, what I need in order to watch something. Like, just, like, whiz through the adverts and stuff like that. So I'm, like, getting through it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway. Right, enjoy. Guys. You should watch maths since you haven't.
I literally got nothing to do tonight, so I shall. I'll put it on as I'm putting my washing away.
You could just start after weddings, you know. I reckon like just skip the first like few episodes
and then just go straight in. I'll have a look then. Channel 4, right?
Yeah, it'd be on all four or like
all
yeah.
four. Oh yeah,
yeah. All right, well, I'll speak to you later. But don't, you have to be careful with maths because obviously it's all happened in Australia already.
Oh, so it's all...
Spoilers-wise. Okay. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so we're like... So
you can't like go on their socials or anything because you might... Like, because we get it like a lot later than they get it in Australia.
Question. Do you follow people on... So recently I've unfollowed a few islanders from previous seasons of Love Island because I'm just like, actually, I've got no interest in their content.
Yeah.
But once a show is finished... Sorry, guys, to keep you here much longer than you need to be. once a show is finished, do you follow islanders or anyone that's been on that you would like to see or have an invested interest in seeing how things go for them?
Sometimes I follow them for a bit, but not really. Mm-hmm. To be honest, I actually unfollowed like 200 people the other day.
Nice.
On Instagram. I was just feeling a bit like, I don't care about these people. But actually, they're taking up space in my life. So I just unfollowed them. But not all of them are celebrities. Like people like that I haven't spoken to in like 10 years. I'm like, why have I got this random person that I maybe had one conversation with on my Instagram? Yeah. Like, you know, some people have very interesting lives, so I'll keep them on.
That's nice. So,
but like, yeah, I just had a bit of a like unfollow sesh, and actually quite a lot of people that went were like celebrities and stuff because I'm just not interested. And so the thing is, I feel like I'm more with like celebrities, like I more just go on their accounts when I want to like
yeah
look rather than follow them, you know.
Yeah, I feel like as as and when your interests change as well, right? So probably when I first got Instagram, I followed a lot of travel accounts because I was traveling. I don't travel so much anymore. So a lot of those pages, I haven't unfollowed those pages, but I definitely follow a lot more food pages now.
Yeah.
I have a lot more maybe sports athletes that I follow or fitness people.
Yeah.
So it's as well as my friends. So a lot of clothing pages, a lot of them I've unfollowed
now. Do you know what I
follow?
I don't follow brands really that often.
No,
oh, yeah, I've followed a lot of brands. Someone like marketing is not a good thing to admit. But I actually followed a really nerdy account and I love it. It's like History of London or something. Oh, and it will just be like a random, like it was the other day at St John's Wood like tube station, and it just tells you about it. And I was like, this is really interesting.
Welcome to St John's Wood tube station. These are some fun facts you can know.
Yeah, like some of them I'm like, but like I'm getting into like, and then I follow like plant accounts, like how to look
after plants. Plant mum.
My mum sent me a card and it said something like, when you care more about your plants than you do about going out or something. And I was like, mum, that is not true. I do care a lot about my plants. I get very concerned when I go on holiday. Okay.
I know, I remember, because you were like, okay, put them in the bath.
No, because there was a massive heat wave and neither me nor my house, because normally one of us here, we don't normally, like, we're not normally away at the same time really, and we were both away for like a week, and it was like 40 degrees. We were like, they're gonna die, they're all gonna die.
Oh no, I shouldn't laugh, but I love that.
Yeah, love them. Anyway, I'm gonna go eat because I'm starving. Yeah,
same, it's 10 to watch shit.
See you later.
See you. Bye.
Love you. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
And that's the app. If you like the episode, please leave us a lovely review, subscribe, and share with your friends, and we'll love you forever. Follow us on socials at We Are Bookish Pod. Thanks for listening.